Welcome to Reframe, the podcast where we challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Helen Darby Dowman, and I'll be joined by expert researchers from Nottingham Trent University. Whether you're a curious mind or a critical thinker, listen as we unpack common beliefs and offer fresh perspective on the headlines that shape our world. What if the biggest risk we face isn't a power cut, cyber attack, or a natural disaster, but the belief that someone else will handle it for us? In this episode of Reframe, we're talking about emergency preparedness in an uncertain world. Our guest is Dr. Rowena Hill, an expert on emergency response as Professor of Resilience, Emergencies and Disaster Science at Nottingham Trent University. She believes it's time to stop thinking like consumers and start acting like citizens to build a society that's prepared and resilient in the face of future crisis. Rowena, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So your research challenges the idea that the government and public services alone are responsible for keeping us safe in a crisis. How do you reframe that? And how should we think about risk and responsibility in today's world?
So I'll take the first bit and then take the second bit, if that's all right.
Absolutely.
So the first bit, I think so you mentioned public services and you mentioned the government. And for me, I think we need to reframe that with the third important set of people in there, which is the publics, and many different types of publics and communities and society. And what we tend to do is we tend to go immediately to the governmental responsibility and how and in what ways and when the emergency services might step in and help us. But we don't necessarily discuss how the publics have a role in that, how we can look after one another, how we can step in and help in that emergency response. And so that's what my research aims to try to do, is to think about constructive ways that we would be able to bring in that kind of, you know, team of UK population.
And so what sort of threats are we in today's world looking at, and what are we sort of facing that sort of is shifting perhaps our urgency and needing to look at this in a different way?
So the risks that we're facing at the moment some of them have been longstanding and have been with us for a long time. And some of them we are quite familiar with, but they're changing in the frequency and in the complexity of how those risks either present themselves or how they embody, how we experience them. So if we take, for example, some of the natural hazards, flooding, wildfires, those kind of things have always been part of our risk profile in the UK. But the complexity within of their consequences and also the frequency within which we're experiencing them is becoming more challenging for the government and for the public services to keep pace with, and also for us to experience.
You talk about the risk profile that's always been there. So has that significantly changed in recent times? What are we looking at? How's the landscape moved? Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so certainly pandemic has always been top of our risk register, and it still is. But I think for some of the consequences or some of the likelihood specifically of some of those risks that we have always had on the risk register have certainly potentially increased because of politics around the world, because of other countries' actions. So, for example, I think most of the people listening to this will be aware that actually our government is making us think more around, or trying to invite us to think more around, what would happen if we were to be put on a war footing. So that risk profile changes with how not only our weather is changing with climate change, but also how our world operates. And that includes politics, that includes technology. So cyber never used to be in our risk register, you know, kind of 20, 30 years ago. And now, of course, it's so prevalent with what's happened to Marks and Spencers and what's happened to the Co-op and potentially Harrods recently, that kind of connectivity, how our banks and our money is safe, how we're able to provide electricity, for example, all of that kind of profile is constantly changing. And at the moment, what we see is a greater shift in the likelihood and the consequences over the last 15 years of some of those profiles of risk.
So with the risk profile always being there, and I guess, us as the public perhaps expecting things to be resolved for us. Can you tell us a little bit about why we now need to be more prepared, or why we're looking at that area to get us as a public to be more responsible for ourselves and to make that shift?
So I think for the emergency services, because I've mentioned that the part of the risk profile is that we're seeing certainly kind of weather events, an increase in magnitude, but also increase in frequency. Where those are experienced by large sections of our society, our emergency services find that quite stretching quite quickly. I think most of our listeners, that are joining us at this point in time, will be aware that our emergency services have either levelled off or gone down in numbers. But also just the amount of things like PPE and the technology that they need. So I work a lot with the emergency services, as you pointed out. For our firefighters, for example, to have kit that can withstand 42 degree heat and fighting wildfires, and also be able to potentially operate within a flood zone, because they are 9 times out of 10 the people that are coming and doing the search and the rescue, which is why they're the fire and rescue service. That's a large amount of training, equipment, and what we need is for all of that precious resource to be used at the most complex sites of emergencies within, say, for example, a flood. What we need is for the rest of us to then start thinking around, okay, well, how can I try and alleviate the pressure of that resource? So part of it is around the complexity of how we have all these different risks that we have more frequency kind of experiencing them, but also it's around making sure that our emergency services are safe when they're responding to us, and also making sure that resource is used to be allocated to those who are most at risk or most vulnerable.
So you talk about the need to move from thinking like a consumer to thinking like a citizen. Can you talk to me a little bit about what that actually means in practice, and why does it matter in a time of crisis? I know you've sort of just touched on it a little bit in that previous answer, but could you just give me a little bit more on that?
Yeah, so it will be helpful if I explain something called the whole of society approach just before I answer that. So the whole of society approach is something that other countries have been adopting for quite a while now, particularly in places where, for example, in Singapore, some of the Scandinavian countries, where they have risk. So, for example, in Japan, they experience quite a high frequency of earthquakes. So the preparedness of their societies has an understanding that everybody has a part to play. And that's what the whole of society approach is. So it's not just loading the response on our emergency responders and the government, but it's saying, okay, how does private industry, how does our community voluntary sector, how do we as citizens, how do us as Nottingham Trent University, how can we play a part if there's a significant emergency that occurs? And what does that look like? And how do we try and organise what that might be ahead of the bee of the bang? So the whole of society premise is really about everybody kind of leaning in and playing their part. And what we have had in the UK that's quite different to those other countries around the world is we've had kind of the last 30 years of our public services being termed or positioned within our public narrative as us being customers of those. And of course, what that does is it means that you enter into a much more transactional relationship with those public services. And that's not anybody's fault. That's not, I'm not accusing blame at the public for that. That's just where we've got to. What we need to move to is more of a citizenship responsibility. So yes, we might be users of our public services, but actually we have a shared understanding that they're not the only thing that needs to be there in an emergency, that we also need to be there thinking through how we can play a part and what role do we have, so that actually the emergency services can be used for those who are most at risk.
So following on from that, what can people do if they want to feel more prepared and be more active in a role of their community when perhaps a challenge, a crisis happens, you know, what are the small everyday things that people can do?
So there's a couple of different useful websites. One of those is the Government Resilience website, but also there's the Resilience Academy. And if for those who want to get lost in those different pages of what to do in different situations, then certainly those resources are available. For me, I think it's really thinking through how you can make a contribution and what groups do you belong to, because none of this stuff happens as an individual. And I think sometimes missing in our public narrative is what we can do as members of groups and members of communities. So we have communities of geography that we're members of, so where we live, where we work, the places and spaces within which we habit, but then that we also have communities of interest. An example that we saw that became a community of interest and then very quickly became a very solidified group was the unfortunate people who were at the Ariana Grande incident. So what we see in emergencies is we see those groups really galvanised that are at the site of the emergency. But thinking through, if the emergency is bigger than a particular site, if it's hitting us in a different way, for example, if we're experiencing it through cyber or loss of power, and it's happening to a lot of us, then what are the steps that we need to be thinking of? And that's around, I would say, not entering into a prepper's world type of conversation, but just thinking through who are those that we might need to look after. How could we maintain our water supply if it's on and off? How can we make sensible preparations if there's a loss of power, for example? So what we're not advocating is prescriptions of, you know, storing 4 litres of water and, you know, making sure that we've got, you know, the world supply of candles, because actually that just turns into a different risk. But certainly thinking through principles of organisation. So who are those that we're likely to be with, and what are the kind of the resources that we would potentially need to plan to gain access to things that will make us safe, secure and pretty resilient until that emergency is passed, so that we're not loading on the emergency services.
So a lot of that, does that come into talking obviously with people that are within your vicinity, is about opening up and creating those groups in advance?
I think so. It's also, I think, about creating a public narrative that addresses that consumer to citizen. What do we understand to be that citizenship? And I think it's really clear from my conversations with different people at different levels of government, what that doesn't mean is you're on your own, deal with it. It's very much around how can we bring all of those different groups and all of those different resources that different parts of society have to bring together so that we can make ourselves more resilient. And we really did see that in Spain and Portugal with the blackouts. We see it around the world with different flooding incidents. It's not that things are happening to each and every individual and we're trying to look after each and every individual. It's that actually those groups are saying, okay, well, how can we try to make ourselves safe and try to make ourselves secure until this has passed?
Rowena, if people want to feel more prepared or play a more active role in their communities, where can they start and how can they do small everyday things to make a difference?
So really good question and a variety of different answers, I think. So there are things at community level in every community. So there's community foundation charities and also kind of voluntary. So thinking about how they can volunteer. But there's also, if they are aware and they're living in somewhere with a particular risk, so there's lots of different flood action groups. There's a variety of really great, effective climate action groups as well. And here I'm not talking around kind of political groups. I'm talking here very much around how our communities can be more prepared. So they're really quite hyper-local and they talk very specifically and act very specifically for their locality, just to be prepared and resilient. But I would say, so that's kind of out in the public space, but there's also some things that they can do in their own home space. And we don't talk very much in the UK around policy that is levelled at families or home, our home. We talk very much around kind of groups of people of policy design. And I think actually the home is something that's quite neglected in our conversations in these areas. So some of the things that we can do that is really important is around communication. communication. So thinking through how would you communicate if, for example, the power's off. So I don't actually have that much of a prescriptive list of different things that I have for each kind of risk, but I do have a wind-up radio because we know that communication is so important. So how effective both our home life can be maintained, but also how we can do those kind of really good community action work if we know how long something is going to last, an emergency is going to last, what kind of the state of the play of the emergency is, and when our next update will be. So the communication in an emergency is a really, really important thing to take care of, I suppose, and that's something that we can be doing individually.
Rowena, thank you very much for giving us some insight into this. If there was one thing that you really wanted listeners to kind of take away from this conversation and maybe put into action going forward to help with how we can respond as a nation in a state of crisis, what would that be?
For me, it's around how you can shift your mindset to a citizen, how you can play a part, because to be more prescriptive would start to align to different risks. So if we're trying to get people to be prepared agnostic of risk, so it doesn't matter whether it's a threat or a hazard, it's thinking through how you can contribute in those situations.
Rowena, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you'd like to find out more about Rowena's work, please have a look in the episode description.
You've been listening to the Reframe podcast by Nottingham Trent University. For all the latest news from the research community at NTU, follow us on LinkedIn at NTU Research or sign up to our research newsletter by visiting ntu.ac.uk/research.